welcome to the show, Titus.
Hi, Amanda.
Nice to see ya.
Good to see you, too.
So, just to let people know a little bit about you, and then we'll dig in deeper. But for now, you are a yoga teacher.
Yes.
You make art.
I do. I dabble.
Okay. And what else?
I make art. I yoga teach. I have a quasi-active blog on Medium.
Okay.
Writing is probably the most fluid and comfortable element of expression that I have. Some of my art, I paint.
Mm-hmm.
Another element of creativity that I have is I cook too.
Cool.
A little bit here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the main things that I have right now going on as far as art, creativity, expression.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So what brought you to yoga as a practice? Was it a personal practice for you first, or have you always wanted to teach, or was it an evolution?
So I'm going to come with this from a couple of different angles. I'm a teacher at heart. I've taught photography at Oakwood Academy for about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I taught at the Apple Store as well. So teaching is something that I really, 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 really enjoy. My mom was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher as well. So it's definitely in my blood to teach. Yoga came to me primarily as a physical practice. Like many of us, a lot of us rather came to it because of the physical benefits, flexibility, grounding, that kind of thing. And then in doing that about 7 or 8 years ago, about 4 years after I began that practice, I began to seek out tools for my anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And the anxiety tools became breath focused. And with that being a breath focused practice, I began to realize and connect the dots between yoga, flexibility, body, and breath.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my gosh, this is the whole thing.
Right. Yep.
So let me kind of explore what this connection could be for not just mindfulness, or just yoga as I knew it back then, but the whole process together. And because my childhood religion didn't really, really make space for yoga.
Same. Yeah. Were you raised in a Christian household?
I was.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Seventh-day Adventist Christian. Mm-hmm. Very, very conservative. And because of that, I wanted to completely, as intelligently as I could, approach the yoga. So I began to study deeply into it. And in my studies, I just had to continue studying, continue reading, continue mm-hmm. doing, continue sharing with the world.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that happened.
Isn't that funny? I think like when we choose a path, like we start with healing things in our own self. And most of the time, if not all the time, that evolves into like sharing these tools we learn. Like we learn it, then we share it because it's so good, you know?
It's so good.
It's so good.
It was just so good.
Yep. Yeah, I know with yoga for me too, it was starting with asana and then it was the breath. Because when I first started my practice, I couldn't even inhale a full healthy breath. I mean, my body was just like, I don't know how to do that.
what does that mean? What does that mean? Breathe in, like, breathe in deep.
Yeah, like okay. I thrive on like caffeine and nervous energy. Like there's no And so, but I find too that like when we do start in that space, but our bodies know what to do if we let them, and that mm-hmm. you know, step by step, mm-hmm. it shows us the way. I don't know. It's just cool when things shift. They start to shift each level, you know.
Allowing you to come deeper. I have two comments to that. Just real quick. One of the comments is that I'm reading a book called The Seat of the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm discovering in different ways that the soul exists in a pure sense. And we have many, many things in studying. A couple of the books about the things that prevent us from accessing our soul. And a lot of what yoga is a practice, is a science
mm-hmm.
of self-study, of body study, and of clearing enough of the blockages and things that prevent us from experiencing ourselves, and then expressing ourselves in the most pure sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's important, excuse me, and it's really inherently good to be able to show up as ourselves authentically. Like, we hide behind so much, and we're programmed to be a certain thing, certain ways. And when we show up that way, we're really doing not just us a disservice, but other people. I think when you're showing up for real, like who you really are, that gives other people the freedom to do the same.
To also show up in the same way.
Yeah. It can be very scary, but worth it.
Worth it every time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You feel more alive. You feel more alive, more connected to yourself. You feel more grounded in yourself when you come from truth.
So coming from the background you did and coming into yoga as a practice and going deeply into it, what have you held on to, like, from your belief systems, and what have you kind of released or evolved into as the man that you are now?
That's a great question. It's an interesting question. Two things came to mind. One, not just growing up Christian, growing up Seventh-day Adventist particularly, the Sabbath was a hallmark of the SDA Church. And I kind of thought how the SDA Church observed the Sabbath. It was very, very ritualistic, very rule-based, very ritual type thing. And maybe, right around the time that I began doing yoga with the physical asana element, I began to also take off Sabbaths from church and explore nature and be in nature. Ground, you know, really Sabbath. And in the past probably 2 or 3 years, I kind of went the other directions and do what I wanted to do for a while on Sabbath. And then past probably a year or so, I've come back to really appreciate Sabbath as what it is, or at least what we believe it is and what I believe it is now too, even in the scientific way that the earth itself rests in a certain way, quiets itself on the seventh day too. So I've maintained that in my life now. My Sabbaths are special for me. They're restful days. They're not me not doing things like in the old time, but it's more of me giving honest, real self-love to myself and to those who I love around me. Resting. Yeah. Just resting, you know?
Yeah.
So I've kept that. And then one of the things that really, really even drove deeper the yogic path and yogic lifestyle was an understanding of the expansiveness of God and of energy and of source. On my yoga mat, probably 3 to 4 months into deep study of yoga, I remember very clearly sitting on the yoga mat, and I dropped into meditation. And two things are going to come from this. One is the energy, two is breath. One, in a meditation, maybe 12 minutes in, my breath got slow. My mind opened up, and I began to feel energy in my body, sensation, vibration in my body. And it struck me in the moment, because I realized that what I had possibly been able to observe from people in church, when they would jump and dance and run around and things, that could be either or, false, true, whatever. It could be real or not, whatever it is. But in that moment, I felt ecstatically energetic, wanted to jump and shout and run.
Yeah.
Because this energy, quote unquote, this life, quote unquote, this source, this God, was in me.
Yep.
and I had literally made space on my yoga mat, sitting down in easy posture with my hands on my knees, like a yogi, and I experienced a massive amount of energy in life. And it really, really messed me up in the best way ever. Like, oh my God, this is what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yep.
This is it.
Yeah. Do you feel like, as a yogi, I know for me, it kind of drove home that truth that God is like in all of us. He's right here in.
He's right there. And he's right there.
And when you make space, like you get that communion. I mean, because Jesus even said, like, there is no intermediator anymore. You have the Holy Spirit. I'm right here. We're right here. And like, I feel like I don't have any regrets. I don't regret because our life is what it is. But sometimes I wish I just like realized it. So, you know, growing up, you know, and being in church like through my 20s, that it wasn't the building. It wasn't the worship music. It wasn't what the pastor said all the time. Like, you know, God is, and getting out in nature, like you said, on your Sabbath, getting out in nature as much as you can, like you connect with the very love of God. It's right there.
The essence of
yes,
God.
Yes.
The essence. It's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write soon about power, hopefully in the next couple of days, and how power, the reality that God is also power and that source is power. And when we get a chance to feel that power in us, we can use that power in miraculous ways like he did on the earth back then,
mm-hmm.
even to the extent, of Reiki. Reiki is a practice of energy work,
yeah,
which is healing work, which yeah. is what Christ did back in the day.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's really, yeah. Yep.
the second thing I was going to say, though, along with just the energy concept by itself, it is breath, and in studying deeper into prana, into the breath concept,
mm-hmm.
into the function of breath and the meanings behind the word breath. When you look at breath in the Hebrew language, breath, it means ruach,
mm-hmm.
and ruach was the name of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, okay. So I'm like, whoa, there too. Practicing in a very literal, physical way,
mm-hmm.
taking in spirit, taking in energy, taking in life, and working with that. And I'm not having to go, like you said, to a church, to a building.
Mm-hmm.
I can use. I don't need words. I don't need words.
Mm-hmm.
Just the breath alone can be both intellectually, academically informative and sensationally informative in my body and healing too. So mm-hmm. those two things I've been able to really, really, I guess three things, able to really, really maintain from my Christian spaces. And then I was talking to a friend of mine last week, a lot of the biblical concepts that I knew, learned and studied back in the day, in my current perspective, I've been able to see with greater eyes,
mm-hmm.
and clearer eyes, and much, much more, I guess, accuracy, I guess, with reference to how I see life now, concepts and phrases, scriptures and texts, ideas that were limited because of the rules from back then, but now can be expounded on even deeper, more fully now too. To one example, when you think about how God's name was I Am,
mm-hmm.
that's the beginning of affirmations.
Yeah. Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you feel like, I know for me, and I like to ask people that practice yoga this, when you start with the asana and then you go deeper into the breath and the spirit aspects, when you're off the mat, okay, say you're, I know for me, the sweet spot for a panic attack is the grocery store. And so
okay.
You're off the mat, you're in the grocery store, and you feel that nervous energy starting to bubble up. You can take these principles from when you are on the mat. And if you can remind your body of that physical sensation of calm, then suddenly it clicks in your brain. Oh, hey, I'm safe. That's cool. And so like when you're practicing regularly, you're teaching your body postures that allow mm-hmm. the breath to move, and you're teaching mm-hmm. your body how to accept that life-giving breath. But then you get a memory, like your body physically remembers, And that it affects you emotionally and mentally as well. So sometimes all you have to do is remember that physical sensation of safety, and then your whole system lines up with it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I know when I was studying, when I was practicing, the yoga asana practice became a way for me to release, built up energy and anxiety. And as I was studying probably 2 years ago, I realized that the asana itself oftentimes, like you're saying, to an extent becomes almost a template.
Yes.
For when anxiety, because anxiety is in the body. It's not in the mind, it's in the body.
Yep.
The mind is what translates the anxiety from the body.
Yeah, it labels it for you. So
it labels it for you. Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. And then you get stuck in it.
And then you get stuck in it.
Like, brain, come on now.
Come on now. Click back in. Back in. Or back out, rather.
Yeah.
So I've wanted to in my classes, and I probably will more coming up in the next couple of weeks, but realizing and knowing that these asanas are in part designed for you to experience the anxiety, for you to experience feeling off, and then being reminded by your teacher, or by your guide, or by your mind or spirit, use your breath.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to your breath. Let your breath ground you back into the body, back into the moment, back into what is yours, your peace.
Yeah, exactly. It's the compass.
It's the compass.
Redirect it back.
Redirect it.
Mm-hmm.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
Now with your writing and with your art as well, do you feel like you notice a difference in your creative work or your creative energy itself, even as you moved deeper into the spiritual practice that you have? Did you see things evolve, like as you grew spiritually, that creatively, like
yes and no. Mm-hmm. And I say no because we have always had access to that spiritual practice or that spiritual energy.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started writing with intention, it was the beginning of my journey, 2017, I think it was. And I dropped right in. Like, there may have been about two blog posts, and then I was right into downloading inspiration, downloading clarity, downloading perspective and concepts that were resonating with me and with others too. However, having the unconscious practice of spirit, when it became conscious, when it became okay, this is what has happened to bring me to this state of availability to then create. I'm like, oh, okay.
You recognized it.
I recognized it, and it probably took me about 3 to 4 months to see it happening, and then I'm like, okay, let me do this now. What I'm referring to is this meditation, breath work. I noticed that whenever my best writing would come. I don't write long or a lot. My writing is really dense and condensed. But whenever I noticed myself beginning to write good content, I would look back and see myself having first sat, relaxed, became mindful, breathed, and then allowed myself to become a channel to let whatever was going to come. And after those couple of months, I'm like, okay, let me go ahead and then do this. Let me go ahead and sit, breathe, become mindful, be open, and then receive what's going
to
come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you learn to move past that creative frustration with a little more grace, I think. I know for me, I have, and like the way you talk about preparing to sit down and write, that's what I do when I'm about to paint or make something. But also like today when we were getting ready for your Reiki session, same preparation. Mm-hmm. Like it's time to channel, it's time to be, stand as a witness and just share the information that comes through. you know?
Yep.
It's, and my friend Val, when we were talking last week, she said one of her teachers told her that all of this stuff, like anything that you choose to practice, like spiritual knowledge, it's all very simple. It may not always be easy, but the concepts are very, very simple. And it reminded me, like, God wants us to have that information. It's not hidden by God. It's hidden by some other things. But not to get all tinfoil hat or anything, but
I'm there.
You know, you don't have to have every book ever written about God or Jesus to know them, because they're right here.
Because they're here, and I wrote something just I'm putting it on Twitter. I wrote just today. Life is energy moving forward, creating more of itself. God, source, infinite knowledge expressed through matter. And once I tapped into the other reality, the other, not perspective or perception, but realization of how God is, that it/he is infinite knowledge. Infinite knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We have access to infinite knowledge. We can literally sit and either observe our surroundings and be given, or sit with our breath and receive instantaneously access to all. There's no need, like you said, there's no middleman anymore. They're just here, become clear, receive, and give.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Like the freedom of it. And I know for me, a big, like one of the big cruxes of my healing has been letting go of fear, like in all its forms, like fear of everything. Like we're so locked in. What if this, what if that, if I do wrong, if I make the wrong choice, or is this the right choice? Is it God's will? Is it not God's will? Is it, you know, just, I mean, all the fear and fear of who we are. Fear of coming face to face with God, fear of, gosh, I don't know, fear of just like who we are as people, you know, like I said before, like all these layers that we hide under, and just throwing off that shell that we hide in for decades. Like it's scary, so scary. But like when that root of fear, like when it finally, when I release that and let it loose, and I'm not perfect by any means. I still have days where that, you know, it creeps in. But like I know now, like I know in my gut that that is not real. Like it's all illusion.
Yep.
And when you release that, like you live as your authentic self, you go for what you know is good for you, and you give your medicine to other people because you're not afraid of outcome. You're not attached to the idea of the outcome. Like that's another part of fear, is being attached to your idea of what A, B, or C looks like, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that core truth has really carried me through so many situations. Just like, hey, you're getting into fear again. You need to come on, sister, let it all go. Or like my mama says, I'm going to have to let you go now. I'm going to go ahead and let you go now. Okay.
Go fly.
Yeah.
Go fly.
Yep.
Yeah. That fear thing is a very, like you said, it's an illusion for one. Mm-hmm. And, I think once the fear is released, you get direct access. You get the direct strength. You get to come back to your power.
I think too, like growing up in church, fear is used as a control mechanism. Because if you're scared to ask the questions, then you won't get to the right answers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't feel like that every church leader or pastor or whoever are bad people or doing wrong things. I know some very good, honest, loving people that are still active in church, and they are, you know, chasing the will of God and doing good for the community. But I feel like sometimes within that organized religion framework, that even without their conscious knowledge, they're being used as instruments of fear. And so, you know, I pray for healing for them too, even if they are an instrument of it, that one day they'll see it too.
The opposite, and opposite of fear, of course, there are the definitions around what that could be. It could be love, it could be freedom, it could be liberation, a number of things. And liberation has been in my spirit for a while, particularly because of yoga. Of course, yoga speaks towards liberation. But to have a sense of autonomy and liberation, to be able to fully embody what's happening in you and express it without the concern of being suppressed, being silenced, being smothered, being told that you can't or shouldn't. It's our natural state to express. It's our natural state to connect. Our natural state is to be with people. And so many things can get in the way of our natural states, our natural spiritual state and natural human state too. And that fear thing can mess us up.
Yeah, I was shown through this path of mine that with my anxiety, my struggles with that for a long time, that was based in fear as well. Like the root of anxiety is fear. And I actually, like, it physically manifested for me with really severe allergy problems for a little while, a few years. And one night, I woke up from a dead sleep. Like, I sneezed myself awake, which is weird. That never happened before.
It was a massive sneeze.
Yeah, and I was so mad. I was like, I need to sleep. I'm sick of waking up with my face, like, exploding with allergies. Like, I was miserable. And I was like, Holy Spirit, what is going on? Like, what is going on? And I was directed, like, fear. And it's, you know, fear of being who you are, fear of accepting love from God and anything, anyone else too. And feeling unworthy to take in breath. Like, it was very crystal clear to me, like, your body is telling you that you don't deserve to take in your breath. It's like treating the air around you like it's an enemy. And man, I just, like, I dove deep after that. Like, okay, God, like, what do I need to do? I'm not going to be held prisoner by this anymore. And I kid you not, within days, like, did not need the Benadryl. My face was fine in the morning. Maybe sneeze a little bit if pollen's flying around in the air, but it was not this massive problem that it was. It's like, when I released that, my body was like, okay. Oh, yeah, you can breathe. Go on, go outside. Go play outside. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go play outside.
Yeah.
So that was a big one for me, and that got me, you know, turn the corner and down that direction to a deeper, you know, deeper kind of walk.
A deeper walk and deeper experience. Not to take from what your word was, deeper walk, because that is the active practice of it, but deeper experience, because the experience is happening now, the experience of someone who unconsciously sometimes makes anxiety happen in you. Which in and itself isn't true either.
Right.
Yep. A lot of what my father passed down unconsciously to me was not feeling safe to express, and because of his upbringing as well, and none of it was true. Like, we all have the authentic the birthright to share, to talk, to feel, and to be. And when the things that are around us, whatever they may be, may stimulate the anxiety, the anxious spirit in us, in those moments, we have the ability to, if we learn the value of breath, the value of awareness, of becoming grounded and not being swayed by external circumstances, but by being led by inner awareness and strength, we can be in the moments that are happening and then express and share the goodness and the purity and the light from that is us.
Yeah.
That is us. That comes through our personalities that are unique and different. That's all I have.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure how to phrase the question. When you decided to start teaching,
yes.
Okay, yoga, especially in America, it's a whitewashed practice. It's very separated from the spiritual aspects of it, the roots of it. It's mostly like a rich white lady, as far as accessibility goes. And a lot, if you Google the hashtag on Instagram, yoga, what are you gonna see? Like a bunch of skinny white people in doing back bends, and it's body centric. It's not financially accessible to a lot of people. But I feel like, and I'm happy to see it, a lot of teachers now are coming out, and you're one of them, that your classes are accessible. One thing, the class I took with you, safe, not uncomfortable. Everyone there, we were there together. It wasn't competition. It wasn't just body centric. Like, how do you feel about what yoga is like right now and what work we need to do as yogis to, you know, keep opening that up to, like, it's a gift for everyone. And how do we do that, like, practically?
It's a massive question. It's an important question that has many layers to it. Part of the reason why I teach is to bring it back to the spiritual practice. after having experienced it myself and gone from the physical asana to spirit and knowing its healing ability, it is a healing practice.
100%.
Like, it heals. In the numerous ways that it can heal, it heals. So it's been my purpose to step into yogic spaces that are classically physical, whitewashed, asana-based, and to nourish the spiritual practice for those students who come. And I've had several students in the past year and a half that I've taught who said to me, "Titus, I normally come for a workout, but I've been really, really able to tap into spirit and tap into my meditative spaces in the classroom. This is something different than I'm used to." I'm like, yes, this is yoga. Mm-hmm. This is yoga.
Welcome.
welcome to what yoga really, really is.
Yeah.
I stayed in Huntsville because I was going to go to Philadelphia 3 years ago to tap into the space up there for yoga. But something said, you know what, Titus, keep you behind in Huntsville because there's no black yogi teachers here at all. Particularly no black yogi men here at all, who can who are either in the yogi spaces that exist already to show that black people do this, and or spaces or and or people who are holding space for those who are other people are black, or low income minority who need this healing practice, who honestly to an extent not need it more but need it differently, because of the situation that they're in as well. The price point is a big thing. I didn't go to tech studios myself because the price was outrageous.
I didn't go for over a decade. I was a single mom. I couldn't pay $25 for 1 hour.
Who can do that?
No.
And like you said, when you came to my class last year, the space was just the yoga space. It was a room. It was a fucking room. If you don't mind, is that okay?
Language is fine.
Okay, it was a fucking room. There was no eccentrics, extra things to add to the yoga. Is yoga is breath, body, and movement. That's all you need. And a lot of studios that add more things that aren't yoga, push the price up higher. Mm-hmm. But if you offer just yoga by itself, you can offer it at a low price. So that's something that I really wanted to offer to the community, as price point, as access, as low overhead. And then I began stepping into the community more 2 years ago around the time of George Floyd's murder, mm-hmm. 2020, being a healing guide, even earlier on in my practice where I was 2 years ago, I wanted to create a whole space for healing to happen for people in Black bodies. Mm-hmm. And Black bodies don't have those resources, those spaces where they have a chance, sorry, we have a chance to release, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. be held, to be guided in ways that can restore healing, be guided in ways that can release trauma. To be honest about my practice, I haven't been certified to teach just yet. I've taught for 3 years from my spiritual practice, from my guidance and teaching. Uh-huh. I'm currently in a training right now from a studio in Atlanta called Seven Yoga, SEVIIN. Uh-huh. Yoga training that's designed around mental health and wellness, sound healing, and trauma-sensitive yoga teaching too. And there isn't, yes, every human being, of course, has their own trauma, but the Black people have had a different level of trauma mm-hmm. than white people have in America, much, much deeper. So to be able to learn and practice this science, and then to offer it to my people who need it differently and more, is something really, really important. I've been able to be connected with a few organizations in the city, and I have a plan to do it more over time, to create the space, to hold the space, to nourish the space of healing for the demographics that don't have access to it. Mm-hmm.
That's important yeah. work. Like, that's strong medicine that you're bringing to the community, and it's needed.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's
needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other layer of that is particularly also for Black men. I haven't stepped in that space just yet. I plan to within the next several weeks, hopefully next month, to also begin to create spaces for Black men to heal. I'm a part of a organization, not actively like I could be, but I will be soon, Black Boys Own on Instagram. Mm-hmm. A worldwide group of over, I think over 600 yogis who are offering yoga for Black boys. That's it.
That's
Black
awesome.
Boys to be able to come and utilize the practice of healing mm-hmm. In the world. My personal goal, though, is to make it happen in Huntsville. Mm-hmm. So yes, going out is great. The value is there, but I believe my purpose right now for a few more years is to really, really create space and impact with the city of Huntsville mm-hmm. Around yoga and healing too.
Awesome. Do you feel that practicing yoga from the male perspective, like that it gives you permission to kind of exist in like a more balance between the masculine and the feminine? Like, it gives you permission to
feel.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Like safely.
So to add another element to what you asked me earlier on about what I brought back from Christianity, and to answer this question as well, two people came to mind from the Bible. The classic story of when Lazarus died and Christ was told, the shortest version in the book of the Bible, two words, Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this man who we hold as God, he experienced pain and loss. He cried. Mm-hmm. He cried. So that was one moment in the Bible that rung with me. The other moment and the other person was David, one of the most connected men to emotions that we know in the Bible. Mm-hmm. He has psalms that were just full of emotion and disgust and disdain and confusion and all the things that a person, man, could feel. And he was a manly man. He was a warrior. He was coming up fucking shit up.
Yeah.
Back in the day. So he's not this wimpy person who just full of emotions. He's also a balance of the two. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that, I began to then lean in more. And because of what yoga is, it's a practice of experiencing your whole self. Yoga in the most graceful way ushers you into all of you. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the one of the yamas, first of the eight limbs of yoga, truthfulness, as I told you earlier before our call, truthfulness, speaking your truth was what really, really rocked me, because I didn't get a chance to live the spectrum of my emotions growing up. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mirrored. It wasn't really, really guided. So to have now this practice that says, yo, Titus, feel that shit. Mm-hmm. Sit there. You have this hour, half an hour time where you aren't being required of anyone to do anything else except to be in this moment, to allow it to come. And one of my blog posts a couple of years ago was entitled Allow This Emotion to Come, to Be, to Feel It, and then to Release It.
That's the key right there.
That's the key.
Yeah, we grow up and we're thinking that like emotions, like what we feel, are who we are almost. Like it's a facet of our being.
Right.
When they just, they come as messengers. And we got to like take the message and then, like you said, you release it. Because when we sink down into our emotions and we don't release them like we need to, like that's where anxiety comes in. That's where we start living outside of our authentic self, trying to be this image of something else. Or, you know, when we believe lies, you know, when you sink down in your emotions like that, you start to believe those lies about yourself, about other people.
Right.
When you can release that, then, you know, that's some freedom right there. That's some real freedom.
It's freedom. Mm-hmm. It's freedom. And in a bodily way, you become free.
You do that expansion that you feel, like that yogic expansion. I can't even explain that to people. It's like, okay, now, like, one day you're going to be... You'll be doing your practice and then you're going to crack wide open, you know, like that's some good stuff. You know, and like what you were talking about with yoga for men and for the Black community and having space to feel and to heal from that collective trauma. I think, like, speaking back to what we talked about a little earlier, having that space to really move through that and to release those things and feel your feelings, that opens up that freedom to be who you really are, because you're not weighed down by all that.
And not be bound to the rage, but to acknowledge the rage.
Right. Like, it's not a bypassing by any means. Like, you don't want to be spiritually bypassing. You deal with it, but then that affords you that freedom, like you said, to, you can acknowledge without sinking down, and then you can show up as yourself.
And I think the other element that shouldn't be bypassed, when you said bypassed, And you mentioned this to me after our session too, transmutation.
Yes.
As I've also sunk into the realm of energy, we have an opportunity to transmute energy, to change energy, and to use it in ways that are healing and liberating and informing as well. So we have a chance, particularly those of us who have been dehumanized and suppressed and negatively weighed down, we have a chance to use this practice that can in fact transmute and transform that negative energy that we have been given and have held into a higher energy, to then inform and to go into spaces that have been suppressive and oppressive, going to spaces that have been marginalized, going to spaces that are, for lack of a better word, ignorant, and bring light to them in a transforming way, not in a demoralizing way.
Yes. Yes. Like I said, that in, when we were talking about your Reiki session, the you are bringing medicine. Like it, it is medicine that the community needs, that you need. Like when you're in a healing path, and also when you become a teacher or a healer to other people, it, you keep healing. It heals you just as much
as other
people.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind.
That I'm going to find real quick that, it does. And it's because healing people often think that healing is a momentary thing. It's a static thing. Healing continues because life itself is traumatic, and like just living is traumatic. So if we have the mindset that I'm going to heal today and be done and be good for maybe 2-3 years or 2-3 months, no. No, try that again. Check back in and realize that the practices of yoga that are designed to heal, to realign you back to your whole state, your state of equanimity, those things have to be maintained and practiced regularly, daily. Secondly, in every moment of the day, you can use those tools of awareness and rest and of mindfulness and of not wanting to be violent, not wanting to be selfish, not wanting to be these things that can take life, but embodying things that can give life. This book, that I was told about, My Grandmother's Hands, by Resma Menakem.
Okay.
Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Our Bodies.
I'll put that in the show notes so people can, you recommend that book to just everyone, right?
Highly.
Okay.
Everyone. Its audience is both white and black bodies, experiencing and discovering ways to understand trauma, how it's been passed on through generations, how it's been experienced now, and then practices for communal healing. Because again, we oftentimes think about healing as being just for ourselves,
but we're all connected.
But it's a communal thing.
Yeah,
we're all connected. Yeah. We all are, and we have to be able to experience the healing in a communal way. And he, I haven't gotten far just yet because it's a really, really great book that you can't really go through quickly at all. You got to chew on it. I'm about 20 pages in right now, but it speaks about how we experience fear in the body and pain in the body, trauma in the body, and then moving through that, transforming it, and making it happen in a communal, knowledgeable, intellectual way as well.
That sounds good. Yeah, I'm going to put that in the notes so we can all read that. Have a book club.
Yeah. So two books. One, Seat of the Soul, and two, this one here.
Okay.
S-E-A-T, Seat of the Soul.
Yeah, that one's been on my to-read list for a while, but I haven't gotten it yet. Seat of the Soul. That's recommended by a few people.
2 years ago. Yeah, I heard about it about 2 years ago. One of my friends put me onto it recently. I went ahead and bought it, and I've been tweeting about it for the past three, four weeks. It's just been like underlining, scribbling, note taking, like all of things. It's been an amazing book.
Yeah, that's me right now with the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. Eating that one up.
Okay.
Highlighting dog-eared pages, you know, like really chewing on it. I'm maybe halfway through, but it's good stuff.
Good.
Did you find, like, I know for me when I first decided, like, okay, I'm serious about healing and I want to bring healing to other people, like this thirst for information at first, like trying to intellectualize things that you really can't intellectualize, but I'm all for knowledge and wisdom and learning. Like, I don't ever want to stop learning. But when I first started, I bought all these mostly used books because books are expensive. But I got this library built. Like, I got this bookshelf, my healing library, you know, And I've read most of them, but there's some I've had for a couple years that I, you know, I've looked at, but I haven't read, but I want to learn that. And over the past couple years, like, I'll be led to read what I need to read when I need to learn it. You know, there's stuff that I like gobbled up at the beginning that, I mean, it was a great book. That's fine. I learned a little from it, but it didn't really resonate. And then I've gone back to later and it hits a whole different way. You know, I think that's just something I like about this whole life.
Yeah. So to kind of reference back to what I was saying there about the idea of God and infinite knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
A shaman type man that I met a couple of weeks ago, he challenged me to study less and experience more, to be present more, to realize that every bit of knowledge that you need can be made available to you in every moment.
Yes.
So, and of course, this isn't to take from studying books and studying philosophies and studying men's stories and things, there's value in that in many different ways. However, also being present and being an open channel to receive what is needed in the moment is can have much more impact to the moment.
100%.
As well.
Yeah.
However, I've learned as I stay present with my relationships and people that are in my life, and I continue to express authentically, the things that I need, the books that I need, will be brought to me in the moment that I need to be brought them to. One in particular, another book for the book club, the book called The Celestine Prophecy.
Oh yeah, I read that one when I was, I'm going to date myself.
You've read it, or you've heard of it?
I read it when I was 16 years old. Yeah, my mom read it and like blew her mind. She's like, "You have to read this book." And I read it. I was like, "What?" It is.
You gotta read it.
Yeah, I need to reread it. Yeah.
I read it now twice. And it was given to me by a friend of mine from college who also wasn't on the path of a church vibe either. She's very, very esoteric, energetic, spiritual and things. And she saw me on Twitter and said, "Hey man, I've got got some books for you to read."
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the books, and it was the book that provided me the language of energy that I needed to dive in. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. So staying tuned, staying open, staying authentic, when the knowledge that you need is needed, it will come to you in the right time. And when it comes, lean into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you were saying about, finding knowledge in the moment, like aside from intellectual pursuits, those are the biggest growth moments for me personally, like in this spiritual walk, is those experience moments. And I find that like the stuff I study, or like you said, the book will come to you when it's time for you to read it. They harken back to those experiences a lot of the time, like things that you realized in the moment get confirmed with reading, you know.
So to that point, it's important to, and this is kind of the reason I don't want to go too far off at this point too much, but one of the reasons that I began to go back a little bit to my mindfulness and anxiety thing, a little more background on me. I didn't say this. I was a photographer for a while too.
Okay.
Yeah, I shot weddings. I was a PR photographer. I shot portraits for a long time, nature things, a lot of photography back in the day. One of the shifts for my art, photography, and connection to the world became when I wanted to capture life more authentically, more true to what is happening. I can recall looking at my photos over probably a 3-year span of time. There were all these happy, clear, fun, perfect pictures that weren't reflective of the spectrum of life. And I wanted to tap back into showing the world the variety of human experience that exists. And that required me to take in more of life.
Yeah.
To be able to reference more of life, to acknowledge in my clients the things that I may not have experienced myself, but I can. I have not read, or I have listened to music, or received from other films or stories that can give me a greater reference and perspective on the human experience. So having those things, having those books and stories to look back on and say, yes, I remember, I read this, I felt this, I know this, I found this back in the day. I can use that as a linking to the moment happening now and use that knowledge in the moment too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still do photography at all, or are you mostly busy with teaching and, you know, your schedule is very full.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's quieted down now because I'm working on my curriculum. But I tell people all the time, I'm never not going to be a photographer ever. Mm-hmm. Once you learn your eye, your eye is always on. Mm-hmm. So whenever I shoot things, capture things on my iPhone maybe, or just wherever, I always see even food. Like, I capture food in ways that people don't capture food regularly. Mm-hmm. at all. I do, though. It's on the back burner. I do plan to bring it back to the front burner, hopefully next couple of years, to capture yogic movements, to capture life again, to be able to bring in an element of authenticity, of portraiture, mm-hmm. to the world as well. I know that I have a gift, and I know that I have an ability to capture presence. Mm-hmm. I don't want to let that go too far.
Yeah. Yeah, hang on to that.
yeah.
So you mentioned curriculum. Are you going to have a yoga school?
yes. Yes. I'll tell you about what the curriculum is. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you around what I've heard feedback on it, and then kind of go from there. The curriculum kind of came up out of, like we were discussing earlier, the yoga, like, mm-hmm. the actual yoga. And having gone through two yoga trainings in the past 2 years, and not getting what I believe needs to be gotten from them, mm-hmm. community-wise, philosophy-wise, and other things as well. Having had yoga students of mine who were looking for something deeper and more from yoga, something else. To also pair, I have two mentees who went through a YTT, virtual YTT, and I would be bringing up concepts and phrases that they didn't know about. Mm-hmm. For some reason, because they weren't given to the YTT. I'm like, what the fuck are y'all getting in these trainings? Oh my gosh.
You're getting Asana flashcards and very, very light anatomy, physiology.
Very light anatomy, yeah. Very little breath, very little of the sutras, of mm-hmm. the studying, of the practice, mm-hmm. of the practice of yoga. So I began to create modules that were 6 to 8 week long modules that would allow the student to either gain more knowledge of philosophies of yoga or asana or the body, and or I have some modules that are more philosophy based and more meditative based to allow them to receive their own perspective on these studies too. But to go to your question particularly, As I shared the curriculum concept with some of my teacher friends and student friends, they told me, Titus, so is this like a YTT? And I'm like, no, because I don't want it to be YTT, because YTTs are what they are. Mm-hmm. But yes, maybe in time it can be a YTT for sure. But another friend of mine told me, though, was that I was in essence kind of creating my own, what did she say? She said I was creating my own a style of teaching.
Yeah, yeah.
In essence, and I feel as though as I continue down this path, I'll be able to, in 3, 4, 7, 8, 10 years or whatever, have a school, a unique bend, a unique perspective on how I believe at least yoga can be experienced, and to be able to have students, to be able to have your students come to learn mm-hmm. from the ways of Titus in yoga. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Y-T-T-T, right? Stupid joke, I'm sorry. No, but, you know, between now and the 5, 8, 10 years, I think as someone who did do an online schooling because I wanted that certificate, I still feel like there's a lot left to, I mean, like any path, you'll never stop learning. Sure. But like there's some foundational stuff I would like to dig deeper into.
Yeah.
And I think you could be a resource for people who have been through that type of program and want to like add to that, you know, add to their knowledge and go a little deeper, you know, make them mm-hmm. a more well-rounded teacher. Like I sincerely believe.
I have three categories. New student who hasn't done it before at all, but has an awareness of, you know, yoga can be spiritual, it can be grounding, it can be physical, whatever. But I want to kind of see what else it can be. Mm-hmm. I have one that's designed for the current student who's practiced for a while. And then I have one that's designed for the teacher who's been teaching physical, been teaching the asana, been teaching some philosophy, but may need to look back and either refine what they knew before or expand what they didn't know and want to be able to offer more to. That's kind of the categories that I have offering and what my intentions are to impact the yoga world from my yoga school.
Nice. Well, good luck with that. I'm excited to watch that grow, in Huntsville and beyond. So, I won't keep you all day, but I like to ask just a couple questions at the end, just a little less meaty questions. So, no pressure. Okay. What's something that makes you just unbelievably happy? What lights you up?
People smiling. Music. Mm-hmm. Good food.
What's your favorite food? Your favorite meal? What Titus comfort meal?
Lasagna. Lasagna. Yeah. There aren't that many other things that can really get me just in the good feels. Mm-hmm. Curry. Curry. A good bowl of cereal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like some basic shit.
Yeah. Cereal. Some of the most simple foods are the most comforting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you on the curry. That's like, I mean, pure comfort in a bowl. Mm-hmm. That spicy, mm-hmm. smoky. That's good stuff. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that was also a very, very diverse type of
Italian
island. And then just breakfast food. Like, what the hell is he doing?
Variety is the spice of life.
Yeah.
And then yes, it is. In closing, what do you feel that the world needs more of?
Awareness. Connection. Mm-hmm. Empathy. Yeah.
A+. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Appreciate you.
Thank you. I'm and happy for
good. I think that this conversation will bring some new information to some people and maybe some healing. The people that need it.
I hope so.
Me too.
Me too. If anyone wants to find me.
Yes. Where can they find you?
My website is my brand name, simiaye.com. It is in the Yoruba language, Breathe Life. I'm on my website. I've got my prices, my options, my offerings, who I am, what I do, why I do, what's on there. And my Instagram social, my Instagram handle is the fourth, THAFOURTH, because I am Edward the fourth. Mm-hmm. And my Twitter handle, I'm active on there too, Edward Titus IV, EDWARDTITUS I and V.
Okay. Awesome. And what about your writing? Is there a public place that you write, or is that?
Yes, it's on Medium.
Okay.
It can be linked, I think, through my website.
Okay.
It would be blog there, but if you just search Medium / my Twitter handle, mm-hmm. or Titus Ivy, it'll be found there too.
Okay. I'll put all this in the show notes too, so everyone can find you and take your classes, read your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you, Amanda.
I hope the rest of your day is great too.
It can't not be after this.
Okay. Thank you.